This is the Curious Human Podcast. I'm your host, Rochelle Taylor, and I am so grateful to have you here joining me for the Soul Expansive Experience. My intention for each episode is to weave together storytelling, insight, and in-depth conversations that provide you with tools to support your evolution, embody your wellness practices, and understand yourself more deeply. Here you'll hear from me alongside thought leaders and impactful voices, and we're talking about all the things that pique your curiosity and will inspire you to step into an aligned and expansive expression of your life. Topics like health, spirituality, psychology, the Enneagram, wellness, and creativity. I believe that you were put on this earth just as you are, with your own unique gifts, story, lessons, and infinitely curious spirit by design. So together, let's nurture our curiosity, unearth our potential for evolution and growth, and support each other as we do our best navigating this wild ride we call life. Hello, hello, curious human. I am so excited for today's episode of the podcast. I know I always say that, but this time I absolutely mean it, because my one and only aunt, teacher, and role model is on the show today. Linda Taylor, or my Aunt Lynn, is an Enneagram 2 Wing 3 who has found her purpose in a classic 2 vocation in the teacher role. Lynn has not only been my teacher in the Enneagram and in life, but she has been a high school educator for 50 years, teaching high school English and inspiring students like only a high school English teacher can. Having deep conversations, asking questions, and tailoring her approach to each student based on their type. She's brought the Enneagram into the classroom and into education and spent over 20 years studying this intricate system. I have spent thousands of hours with my Aunt Lynn over fancy desserts and way too much coffee, dissecting inner natures and contemplating transcendence. I am so grateful that this woman is a part of my lineage. She is such a special piece of my heart, and I'm so excited that you get to meet her today. We are talking about using the Enneagram as a tool to navigate your human experience. She's sharing her experience of working with the Enneagram from the perspective of a 2 and shares how the Enneagram helped her cultivate a life of purpose and inform her growth path along the years. And if you're ready to step into the embodiment of your nature, download the Curious Human's Guide to Embodiment. In this free guide, you'll discover what embodiment means and why it's the key to creating radical, sustainable change in your life, the 3 elements of the work so you can be more awake, alive, and authentic in your work, your relationships, and your life as a whole. Inside the guide, you'll find a bonus breathwork practice to ground you into the present, balance emotions, and clear mental chatter. Access this 5-minute practice whenever you need a daily dose of grounding. Download the guide at rochelle-taylor.com/embodiment-guide. Find the link in the show notes. Okay, curious human, let's dive right in. So welcome here. I'm so excited to have you here. This is the first interview of season 2 of the Curious Human Podcast. And I have my auntie, Linda Taylor, here. Welcome.
Thank you, Rochelle. Good to be here.
I'm so excited to have you. I wanted to have you share with this community sort of the power of understanding your nature and of the Enneagram, and you as one of my greatest teachers, both in the Enneagram and life. I'd love to share just your experience, your story as an Enneagram 2. So what's it like being an Enneagram 2?
Being a 2, the helper, the giver, is like every other type, full of wonderful, joyous things and some pretty big challenges. And I only wish that I had actually had this knowledge of my own nature when I was much younger. But that wasn't meant to be, so it didn't happen.
When did you start? When did the Enneagram become a part of your life?
The Enneagram became part of my life 20 years ago when I was introduced by a friend who had done a workshop and who was telling me at the time that she thought I was a 7. And that was so intriguing to me because I'd always been intrigued by personalities. And mm-hmm. in my job, I'd always had to deal with lots of personalities very different than me. And at first, when I was younger, my only way to deal with people was through projecting myself onto them and then acting the way I would want someone to act with me, which rarely worked. So through life and through lots of searching and seeking and reading and talking and listening and being led to the Enneagram, I started to realize a lot of things about my own nature, which have really helped. They've helped in dealing with grief. They've helped in dealing with difficulties. And it's also helped to understand my nature to fully embrace the joyous aspects of being a two and try to build a life more around that. And so I guess the first step was to recognize that I'm not everything and I can't be just what I decide to be. I came in for some mystical reason with a nature to begin with, as I see it. And then my environment caused me to react from that nature and further enforce a personality type. And I've been this type from the very beginning, but I do think, and people tell me who've known me for a long time, that I have moved a little bit in my two-ness. One of the biggest things is that I recognize now that very few other people I meet are my personality type. So I don't expect them to react to me. I don't expect right away they'll understand me. And I listen more to try to not label them, because I don't like to label, but to get a gist of where they're at. So I can somewhat relate because it's not the way I am. And I have to make an effort to realize, oh, no, this person doesn't come from thinking of the other person's needs and how I can get them to like me. They don't come from that place to begin with. So that's why it's hard for me to understand certain types.
Right. Is there any type that you have a harder time understanding than the others?
Yes. I have a much harder time understanding the five personalities. And I was married to one at one point, so that makes it even more interesting. And if I'd maybe known the things I know now, who knows? I find it hard with the personality types where people and the others are not their first thought.
Whose attention does not go towards the other.
Right. So if it's going toward... if it's going more toward themselves, I can even relate to that. But I can't relate so much to the going toward facts or knowledge or those kind of things, inanimate, non-people things. Everything for me is people.
Right.
Everything. There's nothing in my life that isn't about people.
Right. And on that note, you have made your career as a teacher, and which is sort of a classic two role, but really tailored it to your nature, right? And to your passion. So I'd love to know a little bit about that, or hear a little bit about that, and how you've integrated. And I like to call the wisdom of the Enneagram this radical self-awareness. Right. And so how you've integrated that piece into your life, all about people.
Right. Within teaching, I think education is a very good job for a two personality, because there you can do a lot of healthy giving and helping of people that you're not emotionally in a love relationship with. Because those tendencies of the two to smother and interfere and manipulate in order to get an emotional reaction back are not as great with students who are not your loved ones. So it's a really great arena for healthy giving. But even there can be problems. Because in my early life, I do think a lot of my teaching, and well, not so much the lessons, but my interactions with people were still a lot geared around, do they like me? Am I doing what they like and what makes me me likable to them? And I think the biggest change in education for me in teaching has been around that, because of course I always like to be liked and loved. I always will. That's never going to end. I'm not going to be somebody ever who doesn't care what other people think of me. It just won't happen. But the knowledge of the Enneagram has allowed me to realize the aspects of that that are not healthy giving. and that are not authentic, honest, helping. And to start to realize where some artificial, inauthentic tone of voice is entering, or some flattering that's not helpful, and it's about me. So the biggest change has been to turn that helping nature with all its great aspects around and focused on the other. Like, what is true helping for that student?
Mm-hmm.
Which is somewhat based on their Enneagram type.
Right.
And that's interesting.
And then, so how do you use that with your students in the classroom?
I do actually have a direct Enneagram unit where people self-identify and then they do a write-up about that. And then they actually even apply it to characters in literature, which is really fun.
Mm-hmm.
And it's such a high level of education to take something you learn and apply it to a totally new situation.
Right.
And that's really fun, and they really like it. And so I do that. But I also know that I not formally realize when I'm talking to somebody where they're kind of coming from. Like, especially, are they coming from their head a lot? Or are they more coming from their instincts, or are they really coming from their heart? And that's pretty obvious from what people say, write, read, what they choose to read.
As an English teacher, right?
Yes.
You get a peek at how people process and perceive the world.
And I have actually gone through the 30 novels that we have available for students to choose to work on. And I have actually indicated which Enneagram type would probably appreciate which book and why. And people have told me that's really helpful. Really
Amazing.
Helpful.
Yeah.
Because our Enneagram type does affect a lot our style of talking, dressing, what we like to read, what we like to watch, what we like to do. I mean, it doesn't tell you everything about a person, of course, but it gives you a glimpse.
Well, to see where at least their conditioned patterns of responses lie.
Right.
Right?
Yeah, with the goal of showing people that there's more available for them to use than just what they are aware of.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why it's really interesting to me, because I've gone through phases in my life where I've had many of the same type in my life for a certain period of time. And I've realized later that I was learning something from them. Like, for instance, right now and in the last few years, I've had a lot of sevens in my life. And it's been great for me because they're so joyous, which is wonderful, but also because I've learned that strategy, which I never had, of reframing.
Mm.
And of starting to look at things more from a positive slant always, which I might not do by nature.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, you learn a lot by who you live with and hang out with, and
right.
'Cause they're doing things in a way you actually wouldn't think of.
And what I find is so interesting is that the Enneagram provides the language to understand where they're coming from. So instead of the first step of, you know, not everyone is acting like I am, you know, not everyone's going to come at this problem of navigating the world in the same way that I am coming at it.
Right.
So I can, you know, disconnect from thinking that everyone's like me. But then it's that second step of where are they actually coming from? And if it's different from mine, okay, can I understand? Can I empathize? How does understanding where someone else is actually coming from provide at least the space for clearer communication, better relationships, more empathy?
Totally, yes.
And even as two, a very empathetic type, it's like even something, a good quality like empathy, you know, you can actually be too empathetic. Right? Or maybe a four would be more too empathetic, right? So you can overdo anything.
Seven,
that strategy and planning and reframing of the seven, they can overdo. The helpful
nature
of the two, you can overdo anything to a fault.
Right.
Spoken
and you
by
do
someone.
It when you're and you do it when you're not aware that you're doing it, because you don't even know that's who you are. And so one thing I've really had to learn, and this is something that totally I had never heard of in all my years of reading or anyone, because who teaches you anything about your personality through your whole life? I mean, we take classes in so many things, and yet we don't go to anything which helps us, or take any class in high school or anywhere that helps us to know what goes on in me.
And like, what unique strategy have I adopted?
Right. like you said, your best point can actually be a huge downfall. So for the two personality, it took me a long time to understand that something very amazing happens when I'm with people because I do know how they're feeling.
Mm-hmm.
I actually do know. And I can be talking with somebody and I will start to feel something that I know is not me. And it takes a lot of awareness and realization to learn, first of all, not to sink into that. Because if you're with someone depressed and now you're starting to, you are not available to help them. And so it takes a lot of self-awareness and consciousness. But once you understand your own type, you know, that's my greatest gift. I can really use this because people will know instinctively that I do know how they feel.
Mm-hmm.
And then we can go from there.
Then what? So once you know your type and you've done that work of understanding your flaw, which I think is a huge first step, because a lot of people and different types, I think especially, when they discover the Enneagram, the first thing they want to do is fix everyone else. Right? Oh,
yes.
So I know all of your, oh, let me fix you. Right? Where it's like, no. So the first step, of course, is this dismantling and awareness of our own strategies and where we're coming at things from an honest and true approach of there is beauty and ugliness in all of us. But then what?
Someone once told me that they did not like doing any kind of personality tests or assessments because they felt like they were being labeled and put in a box. And I thought about that a lot, and I now realize that the Enneagram does not put you in a box. It actually gives you the tools to get free from your box.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the beauty of it, that once you understand your own type, and you do that first, of course, and then go to the other types, it frees you a lot to be more of everything and not just fixated on your compulsive ways of being that will always be rising up. But you don't always have to be reacting to them.
Mm. And what's interesting is in the current day, a lot of people do know about the Enneagram, and teachers have been able to teach kids younger ages because there is this more open-minded collective awareness. But I think that people don't understand why. So they'll go, oh, I'm a seven. That means I'm a seven. That means I'm this.
Right.
When really the whole point of the Enneagram is to be less like your type, right? The whole point of the Enneagram is to loosen compulsions,
right,
as you said,
right,
those patterns. So actually, in working with the Enneagram, the goal is to be less of your type.
Right. And I love how in most Enneagram literature, when they show you the levels within each type, and you can see kind of where you are, it also gives you the roadmap of how to move and evolve to the highest possible in your own type that you can be.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't be the highest in, like, you can't be other types.
Right.
You are your type, and that's totally good. That's what you were meant to be.
But the higher levels of each of the types really look different.
Yeah.
Than even the average.
Yes.
And with those levels,
yes,
I feel that, you know, you can really see from, you know, the top two levels of health, and even in the level three of moving into average, you start to see the compulsions, the passions, the driving emotion coming into play,
right,
in unhealthy ways. But
yeah, I always think it's easier to identify the people who are highly evolved in their type all kind of look the same. They're all highly evolved, and they're showing every great thing about human beings. In the lower there, you see, as you said, a lot of the ugliness, or as my friend and I say, the patheticness of that type.
Right.
But one thing I think that's really kind of stunning is, and it's had a huge effect on me, is how your compulsion or your, I don't know what word to use, the sin or your downfall of that type is so hidden from you. At least that's how it was for me. I went to my first Enneagram workshop and watched a panel of twos and heard them describe how the downfall of the twos is pride. To which I said to the instructor, I have no idea what you're talking about because I am the least proudful person you're ever going to meet. I am not like that at all. And I'm wondering if every type denies that in themselves, probably. But gradually through reading, and I had to do a lot of reading to grasp what the pride of the twos meant and to understand how that was helpful to realize it, even though it's humbling, because the pride of the twos is very dangerous to them and possibly to others, because it's all about the two believing and conveying to people that they are the source of love.
Mm.
They are it. And they aren't, obviously.
Obviously.
And it takes many life experiences to realize that. But it's been very, very helpful to me to understand that.
And what I love that you're pointing out, especially for people who might be approaching the Enneagram, sort of picking and choosing or seeing little things here and there with the passion or the vice or whatever, the sin, whatever you call it, the words aren't necessarily in the language as we understand them today. So you're like, oh, I'm not pride. The nine, sloth, I'm not lazy,
right?
So when you see those words, and it might bring up something the same that you said, would go, no, but let me be willing to redefine what that means to understand what that encompasses.
Yes.
Right? As a driving emotion.
Yes. Once I could put it into my own words and realize, oh, that doesn't mean pride, like, because they're kind of old-fashioned words
that
are being used. But I do understand now what it means. It's placing over importance on yourself as the only source of love.
Mm.
And then that's what leads to a lot of not helpful behavior.
Right.
Then the type that most wants to help ends up not helping.
Right. And that's the paradox of all of our types, right?
Yeah.
And and there's a lot of opportunity for growth there and
there
learning.
Is. And the two needs to learn how to give from a different motive than to make people love them.
Mm.
It has to be, and the other thing is, a two really needs to learn, and this has been really helpful for me, they need to learn to be fully expressed, self-expressed.
And that's that integration to four.
Yeah, and we learn that from our four neighbors, yeah.
Yeah.
How to be fully expressed, and to trust that.
Mm-hmm.
To trust that that's okay, and to trust that those who will love you and like you will.
Yeah, it won't make you any less lovable. And if it does, it doesn't matter.
It'll make you more lovable, which is the irony, right? Because twos by nature are quite lovable, I think.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
And so, yeah, it's through a lot of their negative behavior that they become unlovable, which is, of course, the paradox, yes.
Right, of course. So in this last 18 months, you know, it's amazing that we're able to have this interview in real life, face to face, and sort of on the hopefully outset of this really transformative year and a half that we've all experienced. What has, and I also think where we've also come up against our typical type patterns, right? We've come face to face with ourselves. There's no distractions. No one else is the cause. You are with yourself all day long. What's been the biggest lessons? What's been the biggest practices? What's been what you've learned and taken away and integrating from that?
Well, I'll make a really typical two statement. I've learned that there are lots of ways to love humanity. There are lots of ways. I would have said 18 months ago that not being in a room with actual people, how am I going to pick up what they're feeling? How am I going to relate to them when this is all through emails and maybe phone calls? And yet there's a very deep level of intimacy that can be achieved with people through emails. And that was a total surprise to me.
Mm.
Total surprise.
And the power, and it's interesting, I was watching an astrologer the other day talk about how kids born in 1980 and later are part of a different generation than any other that's existed prior, in that we have built connectivity with each other outside of our physical selves.
Yes.
So with the internet, we know a world that is capable of connection far more than, and then pre-1980 have a harder concept to grasp, because their brains developed at a time when all of their connectors were within their physical selves.
That's
right?
True.
And so to go, okay, well, so, but it's interesting that you're like, yes, that I'm,
I get that.
Yes.
Right? I can take my gifts and transmute them through Wi-Fi.
And the thing you can learn if you're needing to sort of understand the nature and the personality types of the people you're working with, you learn how to embed things in assignments and emails that get people to have to react pretty well from their type.
Mm.
And then you can tell.
Right.
And even though I don't think we should type other people, I do think it's helpful to, like, you're not going to steadfastly stick to that. But it is helpful when you kind of know, am I dealing with an 8 personality here, probably with whom I can be quite direct and blunt? Or am I dealing with somebody else that I'm going to have to be a little softer in how I approach this?
Right.
And yeah. I think that's helpful.
Right. And I think that's also a very 2 thing to say, right? I'll be able to meet the needs of others better.
Yeah.
If I have a clear strategy.
Well, you actually want to know that your giving and your help is reaching the other.
Hmm.
And if you're not reaching them, and you don't reach everyone, of course.
Of course, yeah.
Because there are certain types that probably don't react overly well to my type.
Of course.
And so there's that. But there are a lot of people who want to be helped.
Yeah.
And 2s have a natural knack for being drawn to people who have not had a lot of help in the past or have had negative experiences. 2s don't judge people who haven't had what we would call a successful past or something. And that's why you often find them working with people who've been in prison or been addicts or been alcoholics or had traumatic pasts, because that doesn't bother them and they're actually drawn to people.
Mm, they like to help.
Who have some wounds.
Yeah.
And it doesn't put them off like it might other people.
Right.
Yeah. And probably it's an area where they feel, I could really help.
Yeah. And put my gifts to use.
Yeah.
And be important.
Yes.
Right? And be that source of importance and love.
Yeah.
Because I do think a lot of that pride is rooted in, really, it's because I'm not proud, right? I'm gonna be the only source of love, because that's really as a coping strategy to deal with the fear that I'm not.
Of course.
Yeah. You know?
And I think that's the other thing that the last 18 months have been really great for, is that for the 2 personality who now isn't out there with a lot of people and getting, There was a great opportunity in those 18 months to totally go inside and love yourself and really see what it is you want to express.
Right.
Not what others want you to express or what you're supposed to, but what do I really want to? And then make decisions based on that, not on the other, but on what do I want to express here? What's authentic for me here? I'm not thinking about if it's going to get me love or if people are going to like me because of this. What's authentically really me right now? And in that, you really start to love yourself.
Right.
Because you see what's in there.
Yeah.
And a lot of it is really sweet and beautiful.
Absolutely. Ugh, well, thank you. That's such a beautiful, and I hope for all the 2s listening can take some nuggets of wisdom out of that. And my last question to you is, in these 20 plus years of studying, applying, using the Enneagram, has there been anything that you've done in your own personal work or practice that has really helped to accelerate your growth, accept the truth, do this work?
I really think reading has been tremendously important. But I am a very verbal word person. So reading certain Enneagram books over and over and over.
And would you share
them? Has really
helped.
Yes, The Wisdom of the Enneagram is my favorite one. Plus I've taken workshops with Helen Palmer and done the oral tradition, and that's really helpful because it is really helpful to see a panel of people sitting there. And you really get the feel of, because
they have a vibe.
They look the same.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you can see that, wow, look at the eyes on those 7s. Like, they're so awake and curious. And so that's really powerful. And I think a lot of one-to-one talking with other people who know about the Enneagram and who are also seeking and searching. And I have really enjoyed going online and looking at people who put forth their ideas on literature, characters, and movie and TV characters.
Yeah.
And seeing disagreements and who thinks what, because it makes you think.
Yeah. Well, and also I think those conversations remind us how all the types are interconnected and how each type teaches us a lesson or has a lesson to learn that sometimes in characters we just think, oh, well, you need to learn the lesson of this type. You know, and it is a fun learning tool. And again, in that starting to attune your read of others, not to judge or analyze or fix, but to simply understand how to best serve.
And it gives you tools. Like I have had people who've asked me a question about or they've been in some interaction, say, with their granddaughter, and they've been trying things, and it's not working.
Mm-hmm.
And so then I've often given them the checklists, and they go through the checklist, and they go, oh, I thought she was this, but no, now that I go through checklists, she's this. And then they have altered their approach
mm-hmm.
and built a much better relationship.
Right.
What's better than that?
Yeah.
Coming from a two.
Oh, that's great. Well, thank you so, so, so much for being here. It was really my pleasure and to learn more about you from this perspective and to hopefully share others, because I do believe that in this sort of scary world that we are entering, that the best thing that we can each do is our own work to, you know, raise the collective. So mm-hmm. if we're all mm-hmm. understanding ourselves, understanding where we need to heal, then we can, you know, move forward in a more fair, just, honest world.
Mm. I totally agree. Yeah. Thank you for the opportunity to speak about it.
Yeah. Oh, thank you so much for everything.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, take a minute to give us a 5-star review and help us connect with more curious humans. Thanks, and we'll see you next time.